After falling behind in the middle innings of the home opener, the Cardinal bats came alive and showed us the offense we've been waiting to see. Coming up on B-Shafe Daily. What's going on, everyone, and welcome in to this edition of B-Shafe Daily. Brendan Schaefer here with you. It is the evening hours of Thursday, April 4th, 2024, as we recap a Cardinal victory on the home opener day in St. Louis. Should be a local holiday, if nothing else, but whether you got the day off work on Thursday or not, the Cardinals were victors in their matchup against the Miami Marlins. 8-5, the Cardinals win it at Busch Stadium. Lance Lynn was on the bump for this one. Had a pretty good start going there for a bit, but ran into some trouble in the middle innings. The fifth inning in particular gave up 3 runs, left the game after giving up a total of 4 runs, 3 of them on home runs, 2 of those home runs to St. Louis and Jake Berger, who I believe the second home run by Berger, and this is all too on the nose, but I think he hit it into Big Mac Land. So yeah, a guy named Berger homering over in the vicinity of Big Mac Land. Again, I didn't see live whether that one actually cleared and landed in Big Mac Land. Let me know, YouTube listeners and commenters, if you saw on TV, if they talked about it, because I was in the stadium and so I wasn't listening to the broadcast, whether Jake Berger actually hit one into Big Mac Land. Because if so, that is the most perfect thing I can ever imagine. And you know what? As a Cardinal fan, you can enjoy it too, because yes, it was a St. Louisan who did it. And even better, it didn't impact the outcome of the game, as the Cardinals win it 8-5 on Thursday. They improved to .500 once again. It would behoove the Cardinals on Saturday to win that game so that they can get above .500 rather than having to continue to scrap to get back to a .500 record. But the Cardinals are 4-4. Yeah, they're still in last place in the NL Central somehow. That division that we all talked about and said wasn't very good. I think I said this and may have mentioned it at the beginning of the season, even before the season began. I don't think the NL Central is actually terrible this year. I don't think there are any really truly horrendous teams in this division. And the way things have started out so far, you've actually got some pretty good talent. The Pittsburgh Pirates are 6-1. I mean, playing some really good baseball right now. Their pitching has been a pleasant surprise early on. Milwaukee is 4-1. Both the Cubs and Reds are 4-2, as of this recording anyway, late Thursday night. The Cardinals are 4-4, bringing up the rear in the division. They have a 0-run differential, 35 runs scored, 35 runs against. Very average Cardinal team so far, but I think there could be a sign of better things to come, as outside of playing the Dodgers in that first series where you lose 3 of 4, which, again, the Cardinals were, you know, minuscule moments away from doing better than losing 3 of 4 in that series. They nearly split the series, if you consider the way things went down in the final game of that one. And then they go out and beat the Padres, and now the Cardinals starting off with a solid win over the Marlins in the first game of this homestand. By the way, the Marlins are 0-8 at this point. Like, there's a world in which the Cardinals continue to just play really strong baseball. We get to the end of Sunday, and the Cardinals could be 6-4. The Marlins could be 0-10. I don't know if the Marlins are going to pick up their first win of the season this weekend. I guess we're going to have to see. But for the Cardinals, that's just not their problem. The Cardinals are 4-4. They are, I think, stabilizing into the sort of team that they want to be. However, we do have to talk about today on B-Shafe Daily the injury news that relates to the St. Louis Cardinals, as Thursday was a day of attrition at Busch Stadium. Not only did the Cardinals place one player on the injured list in Matt Carpenter, but they also may have lost a couple more guys for an indeterminate amount of time. We don't know exactly how long Brendan Donovan and Wilson Contreras are going to be out, but neither of them participated in Thursday's game, which led to a very different looking lineup for the Cardinals on Thursday. And people that saw it pregame that weren't maybe familiar and aware that the injuries were happening behind the scenes, they probably looked at that lineup and said, what in the world is Ollie Marmol doing? But to be honest with you, by the time the game started, I think the Cardinals had Brandon Crawford available off the bench, and I believe Pedro Páez, the third catcher, was there as well. I assume he would have made it to the ballpark in time. Otherwise, I don't really know why the Cardinals announced the roster move when they did, but that's all you had on the bench. So if I'm Ollie Marmol, I mean, it could have been a lot worse. There could have been worse ways to align that lineup 1 through 9, but the way they played it out ended up being the most profitable, productive lineup of the season so far for the Cardinals over these first 8 games, as the Cardinals put up 8 runs, including a 5-run 7th inning that sort of paced the day for the Redbirds, as they needed a bit of a late rally in order to come from behind. They had a 5-3 deficit going into that 7th inning, and they left the inning with an 8-5 lead, one that they would not relinquish, as the Cardinal bullpen actually had a really nice game today. When you consider that Lance Lynn sort of ran into trouble in the 5th inning, was unable to navigate out of that frame, and you had a slew of relievers come in behind him and do a really nice job pitching. Matthew Liberatore did give up an earned run in this game. It was kind of a strange one, though, when you consider, I think it was Tim Anderson who reaches base on first. He steals second base. He advances on a ground ball to the infield, so he gets to third base. And then it was a wild pitch that scored the run. Other than that, though, the bullpen was really solid. We saw Pallante, we saw Gallegos, Jojo Romero, and Ryan Helsley all coming into this one and throwing for a scoreless appearance. The Cardinals win it 8-5. I think you can be pretty excited if you're a Cardinal fan about the way that opening day, or at least the home opener, keep calling it opening day, and it feels like opening day because it's the important one when you consider that downtown St. Louis was rocking and rolling this afternoon. But the Cardinals come away with it, 8-5 winners, and now a much-deserved off day on Friday as the Cardinals rest and hopefully recuperate with a couple of the injuries that they are dealing with, and fingers crossed for no additional roster moves on Saturday. We'll get into all of it in this episode of B-Shape Daily. Excuse me for the bit of gravelly voice, but we're going to trudge on and talk a little Cardinal baseball tonight. So make sure you hit that subscribe button in the lower right-hand corner of your screen if you want to be locked in on Cardinal content, as we'll continue to do daily videos, daily podcasts, and occasional live streams here on the channel, youtube.com/@bshafer12. I picked up a slew of new followers on Spotify, probably from mentioning it in the last episode. If you haven't subscribed to B-Shafe Daily yet on Spotify, it's really easy to do so. B-S-C-H-A-E-F-F Daily on Spotify. Hit the follow button, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and make sure to rate and review the podcast as well. Appreciate everybody who has been listening with regularity so far this season. I can't remember the last time we did do a podcast. I think it's been at least a week straight that we've continued to make sure we're putting up content every single day. So thank you guys so much for supporting it and allowing this to be a continuously successful venture as we move forward here into a little deeper into the Cardinals season. So let's talk about the game today. The offense finally came to life, but it wasn't as though the Cardinals were just, you know, hitting the cover off the ball throughout this game. They entered into that 7th inning with, I want to say it was just like 3 or 4 hits in total. Ended the day with 10 hits, ended the day with 8 runs driven in as the Cardinals win this game 8-5. But it was not until the 7th inning that the offense really began to come to life. And within that 7th inning, you had everybody come to the plate. You had 5 hits. You had a guy reach via error, and the Cardinals end up scoring 5 runs, and they didn't hit a home run in the inning. This was just a case of a good old-fashioned rally, hit parade, in the truest sense of the phrase, as the Cardinals were able to take advantage not only of just the, you know, what the pitchers were giving them and trying to put the ball where the fielders weren't, which is, you know, a skill in a way. At times it does come into luck, but in addition to that, the Cardinals were taking advantage of what the defense was giving them. When Miami would make a mistake, the Cardinals were finding ways to ensure that they did not let that mistake happen in vain, and that they were going to capitalize on it. And that was absolutely true in the way that the Cardinals approached the 7th inning. We'll walk you through that one because it really was the moment, 20 minutes or so, where the Cardinals were able to flip this game into their favor. And it was pretty much all coming against Sixto Sanchez for the first half of the inning. And then Andrew Nardi came in the middle of it. The Cardinals were able to do really impressive damage against both of those guys. So 5 runs in the 7th inning. It went down with Paul Goldschmidt getting on via error. Luis Arraez, not a solid day for him defensively. A couple of defensive errors that he had. And again, it's just a matter of the Cardinals taking advantage of what the defense was giving them. Nolan Arenado was able to single in the inning. We saw Von Herrera with a base hit to plate a run and make it 5-4 at the time. Again, the Cardinals were having to claw back into this game after what happened to Lance Lynn in the 5th inning. Couple of home runs for Jake Berger, another home run within that 5th inning surrendered by Lance Lynn. He gave up 4 runs in total in the game. coming via the homer. It happens. It's hopefully something that will happen with some less frequency when it comes to Lance Lynn at Busch Stadium. But we do know that he gave up an inordinate amount of home runs last season, leading the league in the category. But maybe you get him to Busch Stadium, you could see less of that. And it was a chilly day at Busch. But I don't know. It seemed as though the balls were flying enough that if you hit it well, you were still going to be rewarded for it. That was certainly the case with Ivan Herrera when he hit his first major league home run, which congratulations to Ivan Herrera for getting that one done back in the second inning of this game. And the Cardinals had a few other fly balls that I thought maybe if it's a little warmer out, you'd see potentially turn into home runs. Jordan Walker had one in that same second inning. Alec Burleson had a deep fly out to left field a little bit later on in that frame. Nevertheless, it was a home run for Herrera, his first as a big leaguer, as he was the cleanup hitter today for the Cardinals, with Victor Scott leading off. We'll mention a little bit more about what happened with the lineup and why, and then maybe what Cardinal fans can expect as you go into the off day, awaiting to see if there are going to be any more roster moves on Saturday ahead of that game. But let me just say, this off day comes at a really opportune time for the Cardinals, given the number of injuries that they're dealing with. But I mentioned the Herrera home run. It was an absolute bomb, by the way, to left field. I think it may have cleared the bullpen. 411 feet, something in that neighborhood, if I can recall correctly. It looked like one that Ivan Herrera was happy to admire before he took off jogging down the first baseline, kind of stepped it off a little bit, took a look at it. He seemed to know right off the bat that he got all of it. I think with the bit of a colder temperature, it was about 50 degrees and wind, and so you don't necessarily know for sure if you're up in the press box like I was, whether that ball was a homer off the bat. But it didn't take me long to just gauge his reaction, and I said, yep, if Ivan knows it's gone, then I better go ahead and believe him. And it certainly was, as the Cardinals got on the board there. But in the seventh inning is where things were able to get back on track for the Cardinals after the three Miami home runs that took place there in the middle innings. Cardinals got it going with Ivan Herrera with a base hit, scoring a run in the seventh, made it 5-4. And then Nolan Gorman, I tell you what, I was down there in Jupiter, down in spring training when the Cardinals had their little golf event one day on the backfields. Position players sorted themselves into various groups. They had a contest. It was a whole thing. And I made note back then that, hey, Nolan Gorman, pretty darn good golfer, but he does it from the right side, which kind of an interesting anecdote. I don't remember if I've shared this on B-Shafe Daily yet, but I noticed at the same time that Matt Carpenter was also a right-handed golfer. And of course, both guys are left-handed baseball hitters. And so I asked Matt Carpenter the next day, I said, look, I noticed the golf swing. Nice swing, by the way. But I said, you swing right-handed in golf. Obviously, you're left-handed in baseball. How did that come to be? And he told me, well, basically, he did not pick up golf until he was already several years into his professional baseball career. And then by that point, there are so many teammates and different guys that are obviously involved in the hobby that he figures, I better learn to play golf. But he decided at the time, this is Matt Carpenter, that he wanted to do the opposite of what he does for baseball, because he didn't want to potentially risk having any sort of deterrent to his swing if he's picking up bad habits or something as a result of what he's doing on the golf course that could potentially hinder his career in where he actually makes his money as a baseball player. And so he said, I don't want to do anything like that. That's why I'm going to go opposite. And then he said, you know, the further he got into it, the more he realized that the swings are actually not all too different to where, in his opinion, he would have been able to do both left-handed and it would not have hindered his baseball career. But then he told me at that point, he had already gotten far enough along in learning to play or, you know, participating, playing golf right-handed, and decided not to switch it at that point because, and I wish I could remember who he said, but he had a conversation with somebody who had told him, you know, you play baseball, you do it this way, that's your whole career, you're swinging left-handed, and then in your post-playing career, you probably end up playing a lot of golf, and you can sort of use that to unwind. And in Matt Carpenter's eyes, he might end his baseball playing career with a million swings left-handed, but then he can spend his post-playing career swinging a golf club a million times right-handed and sort of level out his spine. I don't know. He said he had talked to somebody or had seen some evidence of maybe the spine tilt that can occur if you're swinging repetitively from one side, and perhaps in his mind, the golf stroke can sort of level it out if it's going in the other direction. I know that's a completely ridiculous, ambling story that nobody asked for, but I did mean to talk about it at one point on B-Shafe Daily in spring training. I think I completely forgot to do so. But nevertheless, Matt Carpenter golfs right. He swings a baseball bat left. Right now, he's not really doing anything because he's got the injured oblique, which put him on the injured list on Thursday. We'll talk about it. But as it pertains to Nolan Gorman, the reason that I started talking about golf is because he hit a wedge just absolutely perfectly placed down the right field line, scored a couple of Cardinal runs to make it 6-5, and I thought that's better than any golf shot that he hit down in Jupiter. But of course, he was doing this from the left side, so it's not really a golf swing. It just kind of looked like it because it was a high pop-up that found its way into right field. Jesus Sanchez, I believe, was the right fielder today. He had another sort of misplay, I think we could call it, later on in the seventh inning, where it was not deemed an error off the bat of Mason Wynn, but a triple instead, because Jesus Sanchez, moving toward the foul line there in the corner of right field, was unable to corral the ball, and that allowed Mason Wynn to absolutely just use those jets, turn them on, and speed all the way into third base. He had said after the game that if Pop Warner at third base would have given him the go sign, he was happy to try to turn that into an inside-the-park home run, but he put up the stop sign, probably for the best. I don't think he would have, watching it live, I don't think he would have been able to make it into home plate, but the ball was certainly misplayed in right field. Ends up going down as a triple nevertheless. Alec Burleson had a base hit in the inning prior to Mason Wynn's triple, and if you see the pictures from the game, Mason Wynn was... the Cardinals have a new sort of celebration after a hit that they're all doing right now, and I don't really know what it is. Somebody asked me, are they doing the arch? And I'm thinking, that's probably not what it is, but they do kind of put their hands above their heads, and they're making some sort of gesture that's going on. I think, bottom line, the answer is that whatever it is that the Cardinals are doing, I don't know if we'll ever know, like, the truth of what it is. Like, everybody thought, well, pepper grinder. They're doing a pepper grinder. Okay, you know, that's what they told us anyway. I don't know what it is that the Cardinals are doing, but they've come up with a new clubhouse celebration. And if that's public knowledge already and I just haven't, you know, been privy to it, then fine. But he was doing the celebration, had the whole ski mask on. It's honestly a pretty good image. I think I'll use it just to kind of to throw it on the thumbnail so you guys can see what we're talking about here. But the Cardinals batted around. I think it counts as batting around if everybody gets to bat in the inning, which is what happened there in the seventh. You started with the leadoff man, Victor Scott II, who, yes, he was the leadoff man today in center field. Michael Ciani was the guy to make the final out of the inning. All nine of them did bat. Again, Victor Scott didn't bat twice, so I don't know if you consider that batting around. But all nine men came to the plate for the Cardinals in the seventh inning, and they were able to come away with five runs. It was the Cardinals' most productive inning of the season. It was their most productive offensive game of the season, as sort of fueled by the performance of the team in that inning. And ultimately, it was enough to get this win. The Cardinals took advantage today of the mistakes that were made by the Marlins. It's really the bottom line of this game. Even though Lance Lynn gave up a few home runs, and, you know, there was definitely room for him to have had a better outing, he started off pretty strong in this game, honestly. And it wasn't until the fifth inning that things started to kind of go off the rails for him. Allowed the first run the Marlins scored there in the fourth inning, allowed the other three in the fifth, and was not able to navigate the fifth in order to come away with an official win in this game. For Lance Lynn, it was 4 2/3, four runs allowed, all of them earned, eight hits, did walk a man, gave up the three home runs, but seven strikeouts in the 4 2/3 innings. Had a decent enough strikeout total as well 5 days ago when he faced the Dodgers. Lance Lynn is certainly capable of being a strikeout pitcher for the Cardinals. We looked at his numbers last year, and the ERA was certainly something to forget. But if you look in particular at his numbers with the Chicago White Sox, the strikeout numbers were actually very impressive. Again, I've talked about this before on the show, but when he went to the Dodgers, was traded at the deadline, I think there were some things that they told him that they said, hey, look, you know, we've got a defense behind you, do this, do that. I think he did intentionally almost pitch to more contact and had a better ERA as a result. Ended up with like a 4.3 ERA in the stint that he spent with the Dodgers during the latter part of 2023. However, the strikeout numbers really dropped significantly to where I just didn't think that Lance Lynn was going to come into this season and necessarily try and replicate what he did with the Dodgers. He seems to be power pitching, missing bats, having some confidence within the strike zone today as he did. He was rather efficient as well, moving through the first few innings of this game, but ultimately was pulled after 83 pitches in the middle of the fifth inning, just because the Marlins were starting to put some good swings on him. And I think it was probably the right decision at the time. Libertor comes in. You're able to get the final out of that fifth inning. He throws the sixth. Did give up the run, as I mentioned, as Tim Anderson had a bit of a jaunt around the bases. But Pallante, Gallegos, Romero, and Helsley, you ended up using a good number of guys from this game. But at the same time, Lance Lynn only went half of the game, 4 2/3. The rest of your bullpen between the five guys that pitched covered the other 4 1/3. And yeah, used up guys, but it doesn't really matter in particular because of the fact that the Cardinals are off on Friday. You empty the chamber, use everybody that you felt that you needed to in order to make sure you got that win. The Cardinals were able to do that, get back to a 500 record. And then I think everybody's going to get that day off on Friday and then come back ready to presumably be all hands on deck for Saturday and Sunday as the Cardinals are hoping to win another series. And there is a potential, of course, to sweep this series when you think about the Marlins starting out 0-8. I mean, that is brutal. I know that there are Cardinal fans that are frustrated. I know that John Mozeliak got booed earlier today when they had the introductions before the game. Not sure if that's something that showed out very much on television, but I was getting some texts from a few people asking if that was the case, and it certainly was. John Mozeliak was booed by Cardinal fans during introductions and when they showed him on the jumbo screen before the game. It was more than a smattering of boos. It was, you know, relatively strong in terms of the crowd there at Busch Stadium. And my take on that is, like, I think it's a little bit unfortunate, but I also understand that if you're a Cardinal fan and you want to voice your displeasure with the way last season went, that was kind of your opportunity to do so. Like, there would be people on the other side of that that would say, oh, you know what, it's kind of tacky to boo on opening day on the home opener because that's a special time. It's a special day for St. Louis. You know, that's not really the time or the place. But then I could also see the counter to that being, well, when is the time or the place? Because, you know, there has not since last year been an opportunity for Cardinal fans to say, by the way, you know, we weren't fond of the way last year went. We consider you to be the architect of that. But then I think where it gets a little bit off the rails, and again, it's within each fan's right to kind of make that decision of how they feel about things and how they want to voice that when it comes to, you know, using their voice at the game. But the Cardinals did go out and spend money this offseason. They did go out and add, you know, to the starting rotation, which was obviously the weak link of the club last year. I get it that Sonny Gray's on the injured list, but that doesn't change the fact that the Cardinals went out and, you know, signed him to a 3-year, $75 million deal. They signed Lance Lynn, who, you know, pitched well today for a time. Cardinal fans didn't know before the game how he would pitch. But I think mostly Cardinal fans are on board with Lance Lynn being back in the fold in St. Louis. Kyle Gibson is the other one that they kind of signed for, you know, the back end of that rotation. But Kyle Gibson so far has, through 8 games, the best start by a Cardinal so far this year. 7 innings, 2 runs. So, you know, while I do understand the frustration with last year and maybe fans feeling like they don't have or haven't had to this point an outlet to kind of call that to attention, I also am like, the boos on opening day. I get it. Like, it's not surprising to me, and Cardinal fans might rip me for this in the comments, and let me know how you feel, because I appreciate you. I try to be a man of the people, but I also look at it and go, oh, man. I mean, how silly would you feel, or will you feel, if the Cardinals end up going on a run this year with the roster that Mozeliak has built, despite the fact that, you know, on opening day you thought they were a sorry bunch, and so you booed them? I don't know. Like, Cardinal fans have had it pretty good for a long time. Last year was not good in any way, shape, or form. And I do think there's an element of the organization. You know, fans maybe feel like the organization has not been entirely forthcoming when it comes to, you know, the way that they have approached certain things or the way that they want to see the Cardinals spend or, you know, be a little bit aggressive. And sometimes you hear sort of the platitude talk where I think the concerns of fans can sometimes be looked at as, you know, why would people be upset? I know this morning on a local radio, John Mozeliak kind of pushed back at the notion that, you know, it was almost insulted by the idea that, you know, some fans might think the Cardinals aren't aiming to win and that his front office and his regime is not putting, you know, stacking up wins and being competitive at the top of the priority list. And so I think there are certainly some hurt feelings there, but at the same time, like, if you're a Cardinal fan, you're going, look, man, we just want competitive baseball. So I don't know. I thought it was a little bit of an unfortunate thing, but not at all surprising. Like, I was maybe a little bit surprised with the volume of some of the boos toward John Mozeliak. To think that there would have been none at all would have probably been naive. It was not surprising to see some. And I think even, you know, I think last year I can recall toward the end of the season when you had sort of the Waino celebration at the end of the year, I think there was maybe a smattering of people just, you know, kind of voicing their displeasure with Mo and with the way things had gone. But honestly, I'm looking at this Cardinal team. I'm looking at now after on Thursday with the 8-5 win. They're 4-4. You started off against the Dodgers. You were just an absolute hair away from being able to split that Dodgers series. And the Cardinals have played some pretty good baseball in the handful of days since. So, I don't know. I think the booing, like I said, was not surprising. I don't think it would have been something I would have gotten involved in as a fan. But then again, I'm coming at it from a different perspective. So I can certainly understand Cardinal fans are spending their hard-earned money on this team, and they don't necessarily want to have the perception that they're settling for anything less than competitive. But if you have thoughts, if you were there, if you were one of the folks who booed, if you were one of the folks that were there but didn't boo, I'm kind of curious for, you know, everybody's perspective on that moment as it pertains to opening day. So go ahead and throw your comments into the YouTube comment section below, and make sure, of course, to subscribe to this video if you enjoy regular Cardinal content throughout the season. All right, I want to make sure before we get out of here that we update on the injury situations as we know it. So I mentioned Matt Carpenter on the injured list with the strained oblique. It was something that Ollie said they noticed before the day game on Wednesday. He was basically not really able to swing in the cage. Something flared up on him. I believe they did retroactive to Tuesday because it was the last game he played in. But for Matt Carpenter, was not going to be available for, it seems like, a couple of weeks at least. When you talk about an oblique, that's something that can take some time to heal and is a little bit uncertain with what the timeline could be. So I don't think we will see Matt Carpenter for the next couple of weeks. And honestly, if it ends up being more like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, would not be at all surprising, because sometimes these oblique things, you got to take them slow. But it honestly ends up working out that the Cardinals felt comfortable enough with where Carpenter was in his injury recovery and his status with the oblique to go ahead and put him on the IL because of what happened with Wilson Contreras and Brendan Donovan on Wednesday. Both guys were hit by pitches in that game. Donovan hit a little bit above the elbow area, and then Contreras was hit in a more kind of dangerous spot, if you ask my opinion, on the back of the glove hand, which was the second time in that San Diego series that he was hit in the hand. I know the first time they reviewed it, it was challenged, it was upheld that Contreras was hit by the pitch, but I also don't know if that was one that was particularly painful, because even though they upheld it after a challenge, it doesn't necessarily mean it was the right call. Like, it might have got him on the knob of the bat. You'd have to really dig in and pinpoint close to see what actually happened there. I guess you could ask Contreras, but I didn't happen to do so today. But Contreras, certainly after the second one, which occurred on Wednesday, that one got him clean in the back of the hand, and there was some swelling this morning. The Cardinals were waiting a little bit pregame to kind of determine what the case was going to be for him. They did go ahead and have him do some imaging. The MRI came back clean, not a fracture, not a break in terms of the bones in his hand, but it was one of those deals where, with the swelling, with the discomfort, was not going to be available off the bench today for the Cardinals on Thursday. Friday is obviously a day off, and it sounds like the Cardinals are leaving the option open that he could be available for Saturday. I don't know that I would necessarily say they're hopeful or even optimistic. It's not that they're not. I just don't really have a good sense of it, because we only got just a quote or two from Team Brass, from Ollie Marmol, after the game as it pertains to that. But it is good news that you're not talking about a break, because as I asked Ollie before the game, don't you think that Wilson is probably plumb tired of getting hit in the back of the hand, as it happened a couple of times in that series? And he said, yeah, it sucks. It's one of those that could be a really scary situation, because depending on how it gets you, that's one that could leave you out of action for quite some time. But it seems like Wilson Contreras has avoided the worst case scenario on that front. So that should be good news for Cardinals fans. They did bring up Pedro Páez, though. I mentioned the Carpenter injury and how that sort of opened up an opportunity. Páez is the 25-year-old catcher who had an 806 OPS with Springfield last season. And with Memphis early on in this campaign, he's gone 2-for-9 with a home run and a couple of walks. So not really a ton to get into, but had at least shown a little bit at Memphis over the few games that he played there. before getting called up to St. Louis for the first time. So his next opportunity in a game will mark the big league debut for Pedro Páez, and a deserving guy who's worked his way up through the system, has been an impressive guy. I know Ivan Herrera with the home run today and had a nice day offensively has really improved with the way that he has handled the pitching staff behind the plate. That's something that is a marked difference, I think, in the eyes of the organization for Ivan Herrera compared to what he looked like when he got that first cup of coffee a couple summers ago. It was just a case where they didn't really have a lot of faith in the preparation and the process that he would go through to get ready for games. And that's just something you have to learn at the big league level. The Cardinals have talked in glowing terms about Herrera and the process that he went through, really going back to last year, to sort of learn about the prep and to handle himself in a way becoming of a major league catcher that's getting the opportunity that he's getting now. And so that's really worked out really well. But Páez is a guy that also impressed the Cardinals to the extent that he was put on the 40-man roster this offseason when the Cardinals let Andrew Knizner walk. And so he sort of slides into that role where if you need somebody in a pinch, which right now the Cardinals do, because it's just not certain if or when Wilson Contreras is going to be back at this point without an IL stint, they're going to go ahead and bring up Páez. Now, I don't think Contreras will end up needing the IL, but if he is not available by Saturday, that could end up starting to invite some questions as to whether the Cardinals should consider that as a possibility, since they do have currently the two catchers on the roster. But the fact that Contreras had no issues MRI-wise, that's good news. We'll see with Brendan Donovan. I imagine with Donovan, it sounded like he was maybe even a little bit closer to playing on Thursday. Neither him or Contreras were available for the game off the bench, but I think Donovan maybe was a little bit better off with where it hit him, a little bit above the elbow. Was dealing with some discomfort today. Friday's going to happen. I think maybe it's a possibility that Donovan is back by Saturday, but nothing of this is in stone or is concrete at this point. So we will wait and see exactly what comes of that for those position players. And then on the pitching side, you know, there's some other injuries. Obviously, Lars Nootbaar played in Memphis, I believe, tonight. That was maybe the last one that he'll need before rejoining the Cardinals. He could very well, and I would expect, honestly, for him to be there for Saturday and activated. And I don't know if that's going to be a case where Pedro Páez might get the bump as a result of that, or if the Cardinals say, well, we still aren't super sure about Contreras, and so it's a possibility to send down another outfielder, or there could be another injury, right? Like if Contreras is ready to go, but Donovan isn't, you know, could there be an IL stint there? I don't think either guy are going to necessarily need the IL, but there could be some moving parts that we're not privy to. Like nobody saw the Carpenter injury coming this morning necessarily until we looked at the lineup, and I was even talking with Jeff Jones. We're like, something wrong with Carpenter? Is he good? It's like, yeah, you know, they probably just want Ciani defensively in left field. So that's why it's, you know, but they could have DH Carpenter instead of Burleson. Turns out we should have trusted our gut, because that did end up being an injury that nobody really specifically asked about, because, well, he just figured, you know, Carpenter at that point. And the lineup was really, really late to come out today anyway because of all the injuries that were going on. So it just wasn't something that came up. But I will be curious to see what the roster move ends up being for Lars Nootbaar. I don't think it should be Victor Scott. To me, he's still your center fielder. You put Newton left, you have Jordan Walker being right. I'm not sending down Walker by any means. Like, he should have had a home run on that ball dead straightaway center field that was a leaping catch up against the wall by the Miami center fielder. On a little bit of a warmer day, that's a home run into Freeze's lawn for Jordan Walker. It just wasn't meant to be today. But no, I'm not getting into any of that weirdness where, yeah, you're going to send down Jordan Walker or you're going to do anything crazy like that, anything reactionary. Michael Ciani might be, if it ends up being an outfielder, the guy that you would swap out for Nootbaar. But I will say this. I mean, Ciani was in the lineup today, was batting ninth out of necessity with the injuries that have gone on. And the very first play of the game was him making a really nice diving catch in left field. He's a very good defender. He has not necessarily produced a ton offensively, but he's got some good athleticism, some solid speed, has battled in his at-bats, and I really like him defensively. Like, in an ideal world, you do have a guy like Michael Ciani on your bench ready to come in as a defensive replacement or make the occasional start with what he can bring defensively. I mean, him in left, Victor Scott in center, that's a really good tandem. And then you're just waiting to see Jordan Walker kind of accelerate in the way that he goes about it. Although he did turn into Air Jordan defensively in one of the plays this afternoon. I don't think his back was necessarily right up against the wall, but he was pretty deep there and was able to kind of guy up a little bit, climb the ladder, and rob Miami of at least an extra base hit. Not sure if it would have been over the fence for a home run, but would have been darn close. So at least one nice defensive play today from Jordan Walker. The Cardinals offensively, before I get into, I want to make sure I touch on the Sonny Gray stuff before we get out of here. Cardinals offensively today, we saw good things from Arenado going 3-for-5. He did have a couple of grounds outs to the shortstop, one of which ended up being a 6-4-3 double play. But Herrera going 2-for-5 with a couple of runs scored and two runs driven in. Nolan Gorman was able to have a nice day with a 1-for-3 as well as reaching base via walk. I mentioned the hit that he did have that drove in a couple of runs. Burleson was able to vanquish the BABIP curse there by hitting the ball nicely into the left side of the infield, getting through there and driving in a run in his own right. Mason Wynn was 2-for-4 with an RBI. We mentioned the triple that he had. He's hitting 350 with a 783 OPS. I mean, for all the concern about Mason Wynn kind of having a slow spring, he's looking really good right now offensively at the plate. 0-for-5 for the leadoff man, Victor Scott. He did score a run as he reached base one of those times, but the 100 batting average right now, like eventually there will be a sample size where you could say, well, he's taking good at bats, but like if the average is 100 and you get deep enough into the season, you know, that may be indicative of him just not really being at this level offensively yet. Although I would still consider, you know, bat him lower in the lineup, continue to allow him to play great defense. Maybe don't try the experiment of leading him off anymore. I know that there were not a lot of options for Ollie Marmol today, but hell, I'd throw Jordan Walker there at leadoff. I would probably sooner put Mason Wynn, but I also understand that the spark plug nature of Victor Scott may be a guy that you wanted to try to, you know, find a way to get at bats early and give him opportunities early. But nevertheless, the Cardinals offensively really did look solid today. Again, they came through late. They had the seventh inning rally after they got down. There would have been times in 2023 where you get down, your pitcher gives up three home runs in a span of two innings, and you kind of say, well, we had a lead, now we don't, and that's probably all she wrote. But the Cardinals were able to kind of stick with it and put up the five spot in the seventh inning to come away with the 8-5 win in this one. Before we get out of here, I do want to mention Sonny Gray with the way that things are currently trending and sort of what the expectations are going to be for how soon he could get to St. Louis. I think there was a notion of him making his next appearance on April 9th as a member of the St. Louis Cardinals, get him onto the active roster and have him start that game. As of today, I think I'm leaning with the idea that he's going to be in Memphis next Tuesday instead. It certainly seems like that is the direction that the Cardinals internally would like to go with it. And I'm checking the timeline of some other reporters that stayed a little bit longer in the clubhouse than I did today. I did not enter the clubhouse. Had to get out of there, but was there for Ollie Marmol's postgame. But it doesn't seem like there's any update that I've maybe missed on Sonny Gray. So what happened pregame was we went into the clubhouse at 10:30 when it was open, and Sonny Gray was there at his locker stall. And so we asked him, you know, what's the plan? What's next? And he said, well, I don't really, you could tell that he had not had that conversation yet with John Mozeliak, which a lot of people kind of made a big deal about when we tweeted out this information. But I also think that's just one of those things that mechanically can happen at times when the media gets in there at 10:30 and you're John Mozeliak on opening day and you've got a lot of different things going on that maybe you hadn't circled up yet as of that morning with Sonny Gray on, like, hey, how did Wednesday go with the sim game that he threw? Sonny was supposed to throw in Memphis. That game got rained out, sleeted out, whatever. I think it was kind of freezing rain stuff maybe going on there. And so it ended up being that Wednesday he threw a sim game in Springfield against some of the double A guys. Four innings, 54 pitches, I believe, was the tally on that. The next outing for Sonny Gray would be like 70 to 75 pitches. Could that come in St. Louis? Sonny said, you know, personally, my preference would be to pitch here and, you know, just have the next one be the one that counts. I think the sense from John Mozeliak talking to the media, I saw he told a similar thing to Jim Hayes when he did the pregame interview on Bally, was that, you know, Tuesday in Memphis is kind of what they're leaning toward. But it was kind of funny the way that Mozeliak said it, which was like, well, the original plan, and I guess plans change, but the original plan was Tuesday in Memphis. He hadn't, as of pregame, talked with Sonny about it. I'm sure they've already circled up or they're doing that tomorrow or Saturday. As Sonny even mentioned, like a lot of stuff going on with the home opener. So I don't think it's any huge deal, but would be kind of interesting to see him. Like they did it with Steven Matz where he wasn't really fully stretched out, was on an 80 pitch cap, and they still threw him 81 pitches and he was able to get into the sixth inning at least. So like I guess it depends on what your view is right now of what you're getting from Zach Thompson, because I think Certainly, you'd have Zach Thompson make one more start. You can keep everybody else on their day and kind of honor the off day for those starting pitchers. And then you can bring Sonny Gray back in for the next one. I'd like to see Zach Thompson one more time before having to make a decision on where the Cardinals are going to have to send him or what they're going to do with him. But at the same time, the performance for Zach Thompson, you know, while he goes 5-3, five innings, three runs in the last game that he had, that's certainly more than passable. Again, last year, the Cardinals would have taken that from their fifth starter. And I think I mentioned on the podcast the day before, they would have performed a ritual sacrifice of Fred Bird just to, you know, ensure that if it was necessary to do so. They weren't getting those types of five-inning, three-run performances from the back end of their rotation with enough frequency last year. So you take that from Zach Thompson. But the underlying stuff with the lack of velo and different things going on, the command was a little spotty. I think you'd like to see Zach Thompson have one more start because you'd want to be able to see from start to start that he's able to adjust and improve upon those elements. But also, if that's kind of where he is right now, then I'm not 100% sure you're going to see him just automatically jump into being dominant in his next start. But like I said, my stance is I kind of like to see Zach Thompson one more time. I don't know if it keeps Sonny Gray any healthier or risks him any further to put him in now versus later. I just think, you know, Cardinal fans are certainly excited to see him. And if he pitches on April 9th, that's a home game, I believe, to where, you know, you're going to get to see him in front of the home fans instead of probably on the road trip, which is the way that it would end up going, maybe out in Oakland 5 days after whatever he ends up pitching on Tuesday. So let me know what you think about that, Cardinals fans. You want to see Sonny Gray come back sooner than later, or do you like maybe the Cardinals slow playing it, knowing that Sonny is raring to go, he's eager to get after it, but the best thing for everybody might just to be have him throw that one official rehab start with Memphis rather than just saying, yeah, sim game is good enough for my last one, and then go right into St. Louis without, you know, maybe being all the way built up yet. 70, 75 pitches for his next one. If he throws that in the minors, and then he's probably built up to 90 or 100 for the following, and he can do that at the big league level, I think that's probably good enough, especially as long as the Cardinals are continuing to get good, consistent performances from the starting rotation, which I think to this point they've done a pretty solid job of. Again, nobody's going crazy for 4 2/3 and giving up four runs on three homers like Lance Lynn did today, but the Cardinals starting rotation for the most part has kept them in it, and the bullpen has answered the bell. Whether it's been a game that the rotation goes 6 or 7 and you're able to kind of take a little bit of the pressure off, or some of the games like today where you had to cover 4 1/3 innings in a game that you started out trailing, but as the Cardinals were able to mount their rally, suddenly the Cardinals were in the lead, and it turns into, okay, get JoJo, get Helsley. After Gio had gone, you have to have some of the best relievers out there to slam the door, and the Cardinals were obviously able to do so. So let me know, Cardinals fans, what you're thinking of after the big win on the home opener day in St. Louis. I would say it was a beautiful day downtown. It really wasn't. It was kind of chilly, kind of cold, kind of miserable at times, but at least it didn't rain, at least it didn't sleet. And hopefully better weather to come as the Cardinals progress toward, you know, the summer months of this season. But let me know what you think, Cardinal fans. Appreciate you guys, of course, as always, for listening. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. We will talk to you next time on B-Shape Daily. Peace.